Grow the businesses that create jobs, but they could be doing even more if Washington would fix the rules that are limiting responsible lending to families and small businesses. We can change that while sustaining the important progress we've made. Tell your senators to unleash the economy's potential by passing common sense regulatory reform. Let's give everyone the opportunity to live the American dream. This message is brought to you by the Fund for Economic Growth.
Medical alert. Recent studies have linked the commercial herbicide Roundup with a significant increase in non-Hodgkin lymphoma. If you or a loved one were exposed to Roundup at work and then developed non-Hodgkin lymphoma, you may be entitled to financial compensation and you have the right to take action. Call the Levin Papantonio Law Firm, Pensacola, Florida, toll-free for a free consultation at 800-340-6621. Don't delay. Call today. That's 800-340-6621. Non-attorney spokesperson.
Here's a fact. 50 million men in the U.S. will experience erectile dysfunction. There are lots of causes for ED and male sexual performance issues. Diet, stress, medical conditions like heart disease, diabetes, prostate cancer. At the St. Louis Men's Clinic, we specialize in male sexual health, and we can deliver immediate results for men experiencing erectile dysfunction. It's all we do, all day, every day. Our doctor-supervised non-surgical treatment plans have helped over 15,000 men in St. Louis improve their performance. And improved performance means a more satisfying life. Call us today to make an appointment. Our doctors will create a customized treatment plan that applies state-of-the-art medicine and technology to address your sexual health. You'll see results on your first visit. Take control of your sexual performance by calling St. Louis Men's Clinic, 314-312-3040. St. Louis Men's Clinic, 314-312-3040.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worry on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pitter-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on the rail, but I'm not afraid. This rover,
thank God it's Friday,
crossed over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
All right, it's almost a quarter after three on the Friday before Labor Day weekend. Your weekend has begun. Tell it's begun because here at the Westport parking garage, 92% of the spaces are now open.
Oh, yeah.
People bailed pretty early today, as I would expect they would. Hi, I'm Paul Harris. That's Dan Strauss. That's Max Foisy. We're glad to have you here. Tim Weiland has the day off, so Frank Ladd will be in with traffic a little bit later on. I want to start the show today because I'm getting a lot of questions about my future at this radio station, what with Frank and Frank Opinion and Dan leaving in a couple of weeks. Their last show is going to be on Thursday, September 14th. You might have heard a rumor to that effect.
What?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
No one told you?
No.
There's a memo. Check your email.
I can't get into it.
Yeah. I can't check mine right now.
All right. People have been asking me, am I going to be taking over the afternoon show on a full-time basis? And the answer is no. And it's not because I wasn't asked. It's because, frankly, I don't want to. This is my 40th year in commercial radio broadcasting. I effectively consider myself semi-retired from the business. I love doing this show on Friday afternoons, but I have no desire to go back to the stress of doing a five-day-a-week radio show. And there are other people in the mix who will be considered for that job. Nobody has gotten it yet, but I can tell you 100% definitively is it will not be me. The good part of this You may consider that the good part, and that's fine. But the good part of it for me is, after discussions with management here, they've asked me to continue doing Friday afternoons. So I guess whoever comes in to do the afternoon show will most likely be a Monday through Thursday person, as Frank was and is. But I will continue to be here on Friday afternoons. Unfortunately, I'll have to do it without Dan, who I've known for
many years.
Yeah, like 18, 19 years.
Yeah.
We've always had fun working together.
Yes.
But he'll be at the other place, wherever the hell that is. And I'll miss that connection, as I will with other people who I've worked with on this show. Max is going to be with me on a full-time basis on Friday afternoons, as he has been the last couple of weeks. That's a good thing.
I am very stoked about that.
Yeah, I very much like working with Max.
And I've known Max since he was like 11 or 12.
That's right. I think I was about 12 or so. And I said, Paul, I will join your Friday broadcast every single Friday as long as Dan leaves. Because, again, I've known him for far too long. So.
That's it.
Yeah. So you see why I'm happy I'm staying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the deal. And so Friday afternoons, at least for the foreseeable future, you never say permanently in the radio business. I know that from my own career.
No.
There is no such thing as permanent anywhere. But for the foreseeable future, Friday afternoons will remain the same. I'll still do interviews. We'll still do the showbiz stuff in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll still have the Harris Challenge and the Knuckleheads of the News in the 5 o'clock hour. And it'll predominantly be the same show you've been hopefully enjoying on Friday afternoons for the last 5 years. I think it was 5 years ago in September that I started doing this Friday afternoon thing when Mr. Pinion decided to go Carson.
Wow.
take off one day a week, and all of a sudden I was Jay Leno. Unlike Jay Leno, I'm not taking Conan O'Brien's job.
So more like Joan Rivers, then.
That's, you know what? That's right. She was the first.
She
was the permanent guest host before Jay Leno. You're exactly right.
Oh, wow.
And then she left to start her own show somewhere else. I will not be doing that.
Yeah.
This will be my last radio show, and you know, they may use me to fill in for other people other times during the week, but I'm happy to announce that Fridays will continue to be me and whoever else is in here until whoever knows when.
Did you ever
an awkward thing to discuss
when you started radio?
Yeah.
That you would be, at some point, you would be saying, I've been in radio for 40 years.
Well, I hoped.
Yeah.
I hoped. I knew I wasn't going to be 40 years of the first radio station I worked at in the old projection room of a long-gone drive-in movie theater. That's where my commercial radio career began. But no, I certainly hoped that I would get to do this for a few decades.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Didn't you when you were
doing that? Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to do. And I actually credit Guy Phillips and there's Mike Wall. When I started college, I wasn't sure what I wanted to major in. And I went to Flow Valley, Pershell High School. We call it Pershell High, or we call it 270 Tech, or Harvard on the Highway.
Mm-hmm.
And I started there, and I had no major. I just was starting college. And I heard Phillips and Wall. This was probably 78, 79, somewhere in there. And I thought, wow, that sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, I want to do communications broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
So I did.
You knew it was called communications broadcasting?
No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I said, this is what I want to do. And they said, go into communications broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
No, I had no idea
what
it was.
Just wanted to do it. Whatever those guys are doing sounded like fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And most of the time it is.
Mm-hmm.
Most
yeah.
of the time.
I never wanted to do this job.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's because I grew up in broadcasting because
my dad is.
For people who don't know, his dad is Rick Sanborn.
Yeah, Rick Sanborn, and mm-hmm. so I was always at radio stations, sort of like a military brat, but with radio.
Yes.
And knew how to follow a log and put in commercials and just basically shadow my dad. And when it came time to get a job, I thought, okay, I'll do this for 6 months, and that was 20 years ago. I thought I would do it for 6 months when I was 19, and now I'm 39. Uh-huh. So, yeah, it's been a good 20 years. And, of course, now I love it. I love being on the air and talking movies. movies and helping produce shows like this. And so it's been fun, but I was not one of those kids who said, oh, I can't wait to do that. I just know how to do it.
There's something that happens and it's in your blood and you can't get it out. Because once, if you go somewhere else, just say you're in between jobs, you're in between radio jobs, and you go somewhere else and you're working at Dierbergs bagging groceries or a Walmart greeter or something like that, or doing anything else, working in a factory, it drives you crazy. Because, first of all, it's a real job. Second, you want to be in radio. You just want to be around a radio station and everything.
I have to correct you. You were saying all of that in the present tense.
Oh.
I think you need to say it in the past tense, because I don't think there are 19-year-olds or 16-year-olds or 22-year-olds who are dying to get into the radio business and have that in their blood.
I think you're right.
In fact, most people that age, my daughter's age, your daughter's age, they don't own a radio.
No, that's true. That's true.
To them, if you ask them if they listen to the radio, they think they're listening to the radio, but it's called Spotify or Pandora or whatever it may be. It's not a young person's game anymore. There aren't people who, like I was when I started out doing this in high school, before I got into commercial radio, I did it in high school and a little bit in college, where I was just obsessed with it. I every moment that I could spend around a radio station or in the studio or in the production studio or doing any aspect of that, that was what I lived and breathed for a long, long time when I was very young. If there are people like that, it's an extremely small number. And that's bad news for the future of this industry.
There was a national poll that came out this year that was talking about how over the years, almost every single year, the number one and number two job that most younger people under the age of 20 wanted to go into is either acting, which makes sense. You know, you want to be a famous movie star, or a musician. You know, you get your guitar and you go join the band. Now, number one, YouTube star.
YouTube star, correct.
Which is not even on my radar. I don't even know what that means, but that's sort of what a broadcaster is now. You're a YouTube star.
Well, if you were going to be a broadcaster, you were either going to be a, quote, DJ, unquote, or you were going to be a local TV news person. But now, if you want to be on TV, you're not actually going to be on TV, but you can be in a visual medium thanks to YouTube and all of that, you know,
and Facebook now, Facebook Live,
Snapchat, and Instagram, and all of those make it possible for you to be a star in a completely different world.
And there's people now that do podcasts.
Yes.
That's all they do is a podcast.
Yeah, you don't need a radio station to talk about whatever you want and have other people listen to it.
Yeah.
Probably seven other people listening to it, but still.
I know.
I'll be honest with you, there were times at my first radio station where seven people listening would have been a stadium full, as far as I was concerned.
Heck yeah.
So all of that has changed dramatically, and we'll have some dramatic change going on here in a couple of weeks, but we'll maintain some consistency with my role in this anyway, and I hope if you've enjoyed listening to the show over the years, you will continue to listen on Friday afternoons. Now, while we're talking about radio, I saw a story this week that reminded me of something I did many, many years ago. I've talked about how before I came to St. Louis in the late 90s, I worked in Washington, D.C. in the 80s and 90s. And one day I was doing a morning show there, and I read an article about a town in Michigan called Hell, Michigan. And it was a summer day when I read it, and I thought to myself, just like St. Louis, Washington, D.C., Augusts are incredibly hot and humid. I thought, I wonder if we're hotter than hell. Well, this was in the pre-internet days, so you couldn't just look up the weather in Hell.
Is it H-E-L?
No, it's two L's.
Oh, wow.
So I found the area code for that part of Michigan. I called a directory assistance operator. There's an outdated phrase right there. Mm-hmm. And I asked for the number of any business in the town of Hell, Michigan. And the woman gave me the number of a place called the Dam Site Inn. And when I called, a guy by the name of Virgil answered the phone. And I asked his permission to put him on the air. And he agreed. And a new regular contributor to my show was born, because Virgil was exactly the way you'd want a guy named Virgil to sound. folksy and a pleasure to talk to. More than happy to tell me what the weather and temperature were in at the Damsite Inn in Hell, Michigan. He wasn't the owner of the place, but he worked there in the mornings, and he was just a heck of a guy. And he had a thermometer outside his window so he could tell me the temperature whenever I called. And we never called him ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
I would just call him on the air and do this bit. Hey, I guess we are hotter than hell, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So Virgil died several years later, and I stopped doing the bit, obviously, because it really was key to Virgil being there.
And we know that he didn't go to hell because he was already living in hell.
He was already in there.
Sure, yeah.
So this week I see a story about the mayor of hell. A guy by the name of Elijah Daniel sent out a series of tweets 2 days ago on Wednesday, August 30th, and explained that he had been named the legal mayor of Hell, Michigan, and had gotten a proclamation. The proclamation says, and it's in that kind of diploma-like font, whereas the town of Hell, Michigan needs a mayor, and whereas no one else wants the job, and whereas being the mayor of Hell can be a devil of a responsibility, and whereas we finally found a sucker who actually wants the job, now therefore we, the citizens of Hell, Michigan, do hereby proclaim Elijah Daniel to be mayor of Hell on this 30th day of August 2017, or until someone better comes along. And it's signed by the guy who had once been the mayor of Hell, and there's a picture of Elijah with this guy. And then Elijah decided on his first day in office he'd have some fun. He issued a proclamation banning all straight people from entering hell.
Nice.
Growing up, I was always told that homosexuals would go to hell. Now the heterosexuals are going to try to take this from us, too. So as of today, I'm establishing new vetting measures to keep radical heterosexuals out of this town. He goes That's on to fantastic. Say the purpose is to keep straights from going into town and procreating and having more children and taking rightfully gay jobs. It's a very, very clever parody
that's great.
That he sent out there. And then he started tweeting about it. And he said, I love straights, but my number one priority is the safety of my town. Until this threat has been reviewed, we cannot allow them to enter. Yes, I'm the first U.S. mayor to ban heterosexuality, but I hope my act of bravery will inspire fellow politicians to ban straights as well. Make hell gay again. These are the tweets that this guy sent out. And then about an hour later, he sent out another tweet. Although I enjoyed my time as mayor, I've been informed that I've been impeached.
Oh, wow.
He says, this will not affect my presidential run. The funny thing about this is, you can become the mayor of Hell, Michigan yourself for $100.
Well, I know what I'm doing tonight.
The town has a thing ongoing where they don't really have a mayor. There's only a couple of hundred people that live there. There's like an ice cream parlor and the Damsite Inn and a couple of other businesses and a post office. That's it. You could actually send your mail there and have it postmarked hell. So let's say Dan wanted to send email to his ex. He would probably want that to come directly from, or I guess you would actually address it to hell, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Heck yeah. Heck yeah, I would.
So I don't know how you do it, but I'm sure if you Google it, you can find out how to become the mayor of hell for $100. And then one other thing I want to mention before we break here, and that is my congratulations to a guy named Ed Cunningham. I don't know anything about college football. I don't watch college football on ESPN or ABC. But apparently Ed Cunningham has been a color analyst for that network for something like 20 years. But he resigned this week because of what he said was his growing discomfort with the damage being inflicted on the players he was watching each week. He said the hits kept coming right in front of him until he could not, in good conscience, continue supporting his role in football's multi-billion-dollar apparatus. He says, in the current state, there are some real dangers, like broken limbs and wear and tear, but the real crux of this is, I just don't think the game is safe for the brain. It's unacceptable. He said he grew weary of watching players be removed from the field on carts with little ceremony. We would go to a commercial, we'd come back, and we'd say, okay, the guy with the broken leg is gone, now it's 3rd and 8. But when he thought about some of the people he knew when he played professional football, it was very different because you had to think about the brain trauma. He says, people have been telling me I just can't cheer for the big hits anymore. I used to go nuts, and now I hope I'm more like, boy, I hope that guy gets up. Cunningham was a teammate of Dave Duerson with the Cardinals in 1992 and 1993 out there in Arizona. If you don't know, Dave Duerson killed himself in 2011 and is one of the many NFL players who was found to have CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. He also knew Junior Seau, who died of the same thing, and Andre Waters, who died of the same thing. And he says, I know way, way, way too many of these people. And by the way, I know that I'm leaving a really nice six-figure salary on the floor here. But I have to do this in good conscience because I cannot be a part of this anymore. My hat's off to him. I've been talking about this concussion crisis and the head trauma crisis in the NFL for years and how it's turned me off to the game. I thought for a while it was just the fact that the Rams continued to suck in all those years they were there. But then my conscience got to me also. And I wonder how many more people are going to come to this same conclusion. It's very brave of Ed Cunningham to say that and move away from that job that he's been doing for 20 years at ESPN. The sad thing is, somebody else will just take his place, and when the games start rolling on college football Saturdays tomorrow, the games will go on. But I wonder about the parents of the younger generation. Just like we were talking about youngsters getting into radio, there's got to be a problem with a lot of kids not being allowed to play football by their parents who care too much about their brains and don't want it when they get to be 40, 45, 50 years old, for them not to be able to walk and to see suicide as a viable out from the horrors of what's happened to their heads because they were out there knocking them together with other people on the field. So good for you, Ed Cunningham. You have my complete support. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk with a guy who wrote a book called The Best Year Ever. One guy, 1 year, 12 once-in-a-lifetime adventures. That's next on the Big 550 KTRS.
Meet me.
All right. We're going to get a check on traffic with...
Oops. With Frank Ladd.
Yes, Frank. Oh.
Well, we don't
know. No, I lost him.
Okay.
I lost him on the phone.
Okay.
Yeah, he was on the phone.
Okay.
Because he was calling back. So Frank called. There he is, right there. So
there
punch
is.
That up there.
Okay.
All right. Now we're going to check traffic with Frank Ladd. Frank?
Well, it's a rough start to your afternoon drive, Dan. We're headed westbound on Highway 64. You're on the break to Kings Highway to McCausland. Eastbound 64 slows Jefferson through to the Poplar. Southbound 270 is a heavy stretch at Page. Then again between 64 and Doherty Ferry this afternoon. And this update is brought to you by Staples. Staples has low prices on everything your kids need to head back to school. And when your kids have what they need, they'll go back with confidence. Get everything they need for less at Staples. It's pro time. Frank Ladd in the KTRS Traffic Center.
Hi, John Grayson for Premier Heating and Cooling. You know that this summer has taught us one thing and one thing only, and that's the importance of air conditioning. Well, Premier Heating and Cooling is there for you, whether it's the dog days of summer or the cold of winter. 636-916-1122, the oldest and most experienced American Standard customer care dealer in the St. Louis and St. Charles area. And they're so good that they've noticed now some of their competitors are now calling themselves the Premier AC Service. Not even close. Make sure that when you call, you get the original. Premier Heating and Cooling, 636-916-1122. Free estimates on any service that needs to be done. 24-hour emergency service available. Financing for the bigger jobs and maintenance agreements that can save you a lot of money over time. But the most important thing is that experience. 25 years, residential and commercial HVAC. If it's too hot in your house or too cold in your business, give them a call. They'll make it right. 636-916-1122, Premier Heating and Cooling.
More big news from Kubota and Seavers Equipment in Auburn and Jerseyville, Illinois. Mark your calendar for the Kubota Orange Day event at the new Seavers location in Jerseyville, Illinois, Saturday, September 16th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Folks, this is a big deal, and here's why. Kubota personnel and products will be on site, ranging from residential mowers to compact and ag tractors, Kubota's line of construction equipment, as well as Land Pride equipment. Take advantage of this hands-on opportunity for demonstrations, presentations, and even ride and drives for qualified operators. And don't forget, free hot dogs, chips, and drinks, raffles, door prizes, and sweepstakes. Join us for the Seavers Kubota Orange Day event at Seavers Equipment in Jerseyville, Illinois, September 16th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. For information on the Seavers Kubota Orange Day event, contact the Seavers location in Jerseyville today. SeaversEquipment.com.
Hey,
Hey, St. Louis, this is A.J. Cochran, center back for St. Louis FC. Join us in a worldwide technology soccer park as we represent our city against some of the best soccer talent in the country.
Make your plans now and get your tickets to see the St. Louis FC in September with three big home games. September 9th versus Harrisburg, September 16th versus Orlando City, and September 23rd versus FC Cincinnati. It's time to pack the house at Worldwide Technology Soccer Park and Toyota Stadium. For more information or to get your tickets, go to stlouisfc.com.
Hey, it's John Carney for Allen Roofing, and with storm season, again, the top of your house getting a beating. Turn to a name you can trust, people that are local and have been here a while. And when I say a while, I mean 1972. Contractor Magazine has named them one of the tops in the country. So for your siding, for your gutters, for your roof, turn to somebody and somebody here. They've done their homework. Do yours. Allen Roofing, online at aroofing.net.
For life's aches and pains, choose Blue Emu Continuous Pain Relief Spray. It works fast, and it's easy to use. Designed to work odor-free in all those remote areas. It works here. It's odor-free here. It works here. Blue Emu Continuous Pain Relief Spray. Fast-acting, easy-to-use, odor-free pain relief for all those remote areas. Available at Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and other fine retailers.
On Tuesday, September 5th at 1 p.m., listen to a two-hour special edition of Issues in Education from the new state-of-the-art Dressel Elementary School in the Lindbergh School District. Hear how the new Dressel Elementary is designed to meet the 21st century standards for learning with features that include designated areas for STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, safe rooms that provide protection from severe storms, security protocols, and the use of sustainable design features to reduce operating costs, and much more. Jennifer Blome will serve as the host and will speak with Dr. Jim Simpson, Lindbergh School Superintendent, Karen Schuster, Board President, Vic Lenz of the Missouri State Board of Education, and other school leaders. Issues in Education, created and produced by Ittner Architects, is a national thought leadership forum that's featuring Dressel Elementary and these expert educators. For details and to hear the broadcast on Tuesday, September 5th from 1 to 3 p.m. from Dressel Elementary School, visit the Dressel page on issuesineducation.net.
Who doesn't love huge savings? Shop Dell's Labor Day sale and get free shipping on everything, like the latest Dell PCs with Intel Core processors. Call 1-800-BUY-DELL.
Maybe it's the way she walked. To my heart and story, through the doors and past the gods.
Liam Caffrey has a new book out called The Best Year Ever. The subtitle is One Guy, One Year, 12 Once-in-a-Lifetime Adventures. Among those adventures, going to a party at the Playboy Mansion, running with the Bulls in Pamplona, throwing out the first pitch at a Major League Baseball game, playing golf at St. Andrews in Scotland, and playing in a tournament at the World Series of Poker. I've had a great time reading this book over the last few days, and I've asked him to join us here today. Hi, Liam. How are you?
Good, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Who chose the activities that you did over the course of this year?
Yeah, so I chose them. I sat down. I mean, the background on the book was a little bit of, at the time I set out to write it, I was in my mid-30s. I was, to all outward appearances, doing really well, great job, great friends, living in Chicago. But I really felt like I was stuck in a bit of a rut, that I was just head down day-to-day working, wasn't really taking time to enjoy life and sort of seeing things pass me by. And so I thought, listen, why don't I stop and lay out what are 12 things I've always wanted to do in life and try to see could I get them done all within a calendar year. So I sat down and I made a list, and it was a mix of things that I'd always wanted to do. Some of them were intensely personal to me. Some of them were things that, might have been on anybody's bucket list. But it was something that was personal to me, and I kind of crafted at the beginning of the year and then planned out how could I achieve them all throughout the course of that year.
Well, you say in the book that at the time you were working, and you just mentioned you had a good job.
Yep.
But your job was destroying America, Liam.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I was a consultant. I worked in financial services, and so I did a little bit of everything.
You worked for a subprime mortgage guy, and that's the people who ruined America.
Yeah, there was a time I actually didn't work for the subprime company, but I worked for somebody that bought a subprime company, and they were trying to figure out what to do with it. And so for a while, we were in what I kind of call the engine room of doom of the economy before we realized it.
That's what I'm talking about. All right. Yep. I just wanted to get that out there. Let's leave it behind and move on to the one that I think a lot of middle-aged guys like us would want to know about first, and that is going to a party at the Playboy Mansion, which I'm guessing in the 21st century isn't quite as cool as it would have been, oh, I don't know, 50 years ago.
Yeah, you know, that was one of those where it's funny, when I describe the book, everyone seizes on that chapter. It's obviously a very popular topic, and everybody wants to know what it's like. And at the time, again, as you say, you're a 30-something single guy, and you think, hey, let's go to the Playboy Mansion. I'd say it's one of the funnier chapters in the book, in my opinion. It was a fun experience in some sense, but as you say, it definitely was probably a little different in the 70s and 80s than it was today. I think today you can go into any club in Vegas on a Saturday night and probably have a wilder time than you could have at the Playboy Mansion. So it felt a little bit cliched. I'm glad I did it. It was a fun story, fun experience, I think good to write about. But I definitely, you know, if you're looking for a good time, I'd almost say you could go to Vegas and do it a little bit better than the Playboy Mansion. Having said that, I mean, I got to give it up to Hugh Hefner. I mean, he was in his 80s at the time, and he's out there partying, so the man still brings it when he needs to.
All right, well, but let's go back to Hef here for just a second here.
Yep.
I get the impression from the book that you were a little bit disappointed in Hef that night because he kind of looked like a guy in his 80s at a party where he didn't belong.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely, I felt a little bit bad for him. He almost felt like, somebody at the zoo. You know, he's in the mansion, and then, you know, most of the parties take place outside, and they sort of parade him out behind velvet ropes, and he sits there with a half dozen playmates. But it was, you know, it's 11 o'clock on a Saturday night, and you think the guy's 85. He probably wants to go to bed. So he definitely puts on a game show, but it's you a little bit feel bad for him, and it's a little bit like, you know, the old lion in the zoo. You sort of just want him to be able to go back in the cave and relax.
Yeah, the zoo mixed with a Weekend at Bernie's vibe.
Yeah, he's not quite that, but you can definitely, he's getting up there.
I love something you write about here on page 77 of your book when you're describing the women who you ran into that night and the different kinds of women. And then you get to a bunch of women who had more tattoos than your average motorcycle gang. Quote, one of the girls was topless and had a tattoo of a topless girl on her back. Take that, MC Escher.
It was a bit of a mind bender. You definitely see some interesting sights out there. And some folks that you can tell, they are professional party goers, and they kind of dressed the part.
Were you thinking ahead of time, I'm going to go to the Playboy Mansion and get laid in the grotto?
No, I don't know that anybody. I think even myself, I thought, listen, these are fairly curated events anymore. They're not. This is not the swinging 70s. So, I mean, set aside the fact that I think a few years after I was there, they found Legionnaire's disease in the grotto.
Yeah.
So I was pretty glad. I mean, you definitely don't go in thinking that's going to happen. You sort of realize it's a bit of a staged environment and a club environment. But again, it's still an experience, but one that I've been there, done that. Wouldn't say I'd want to do it again.
When you look back on it, do you check the disappointment box for that one?
Yeah, again, I'd say as an experience for writing the book, I thought it was a great experience, and it ended up being a great story. In terms of, you know, would it make the top list of, you know, experiences and you know, happier or most kind of joyous experiences I had through the book? No, it actually was towards the bottom and a bit more of a disappointment versus, you know, what you would have hoped.
That's what I thought. Now, there's another one in the book that fits that same criteria. And by the way, I've shared this experience, and that is going to play at a tournament at the World Series of Poker. In your case, it wasn't the main event. In my case, it was the main event, but we both walked away not winning any money and feeling like we just paid to be bored for a while, right?
Yeah, that's another one where, again, the headline is, oh, World Series of Poker, it's a great event. And I play a lot of poker, and it's part of it is you're in it for the camaraderie and the experience, and you win some, you lose some, but it's a fun experience. And I think you watch even poker on TV in the World Series of Poker, and you get that same impression that there's a lot of, you know, I'm all in, I'm going to stand up, they ring a bell, you know, it's salvation on the river, et cetera. And I found you get there, and it's a sea of humanity. Everyone plays very tight. It's actually, you don't realize how when you watch it on TV, they edit it so carefully, it makes it look like every hand goes to the river and has a big climax to it. What you don't realize is most of the hands, I mean, we were lucky if we saw a flop. Everybody folded. They play so tight. It's impossible to get a read on anybody at the table. So it's almost like you're sitting for a math exam. You're just sitting there playing the odds. Everyone's playing the odds. There's no discussion. Hands are running around at lightning speed. And again, it's almost like you're sitting for the SAT. And so you play the odds, and I played the odds, and I lost on a hand where I should have won, and then I was short stacked, and I kind of was out pretty quickly. And you walk away, and you're like, wow, I just, you know, wasted several hours of my life doing math exercises in my head. I'm not sure what I learned.
That's right. And the social aspect of the game is completely absent. When I played, I made it to day two of the main event, and on that second day, no one at my table said anything other than raise and an amount. No complete sentences were used all day long.
Yes, exactly. Half the people have headphones in, sunglasses on. It's just, they're just running math in their head. There is absolutely no social dynamic to it, which, again, is part of, as an amateur, part of why I play the game.
Yeah, I agree. And I've been playing poker a long time, and when I finally got there, I didn't put up the $10,000 myself. I got in through a $200 satellite, and I thought, okay, well, here's my chance, like a friend of mine did, and he ran deep and made a lot of money. But for me, it was just boring in retrospect.
Yep.
Let's move on to something a little bit more exciting. You took part in an event that I actually consider one of the crueler things to go on in the world on a regular basis. That's a long list, I know. But you went to Pamplona, Spain for the Running of the Bulls.
Yep. Yeah, that was one of the events, I think, a highlight. I mean, obviously, you know, you kind of set aside a little bit of the it is a cultural event that goes back centuries in Spain. So we, you know, there are differing opinions on the cruelty of it in terms of, yes, at the end of the day, the bulls that run fight in the arena, and they get killed in the arena. So your opinion of bullfighting will skew, you know, how you view the event. But it's a cultural experience in that region of Spain. It goes back hundreds of years. People take it very seriously. And I really studied for it. I mean, I went over there and I studied the culture. I studied the route. You know, there are seven different discrete sections of the route over the course of a half mile. They each have their different pluses and minuses and dangers in terms of running with them. And then ran one morning with them. And that was one where it blows you away. I mean, you watch it on TV, and it doesn't convey how big and fast these animals are. I mean, you're standing there in the street in a fairly narrow side street with 2,000 other people, and a half-ton to three-quarter-ton animal, six of them, come sprinting around a corner at you going 20 miles an hour, and it's like playing in traffic. And you really don't run with the bulls for that long. You kind of have to start running before they get to you, and you try to run next to them for a while. But, you know, that was one where, I mean, there's real danger. I mean, the day I ran, it was a fairly pedestrian event. The bulls stayed in tight formation. It was a fast run. Nobody really got gored. The next day, somebody died. It was actually the first time somebody had been killed since, I think, 1995 in the bull run. And again, it was a place where I debated, should I run in that section? So a very safe spot one day could be deadly the next day, and you're just dealing with, you know, humans and wild animals, and it's there's real danger involved. But that was one where, again, the whole culture and the experience of it was one of the highlights of the year.
Well, you make it sound like running with the bulls is a much better idea than running from the bulls.
Yeah, I mean, you're all running from the bulls in some way, but it's kind of, I mean, funny. I mean, they're going 20 miles an hour, and so you can't keep up with them for very long. You've got to try to time it. There's a crowd, and so, again, you can get tripped and pushed, and actually, I think the other humans are more of a danger sometimes than the bulls are.
Ah.
But you're trying to get with them, and then you get knocked down. They tell you stay down. A lot of the people that really get gored, it's they fall down, and they get up, and they get a horn in the back. So they tell you, if you fall down, stay down. It's better to get trampled than to get gored.
Oh.
But it's an experience, I'll tell you.
Did you speak to people who had done this many times before for some advice?
I did. You know, I read books, I read blogs, I talked to some people. You know, you, what you'll find is there's obviously a contingent of Spaniards that actually have running clubs, Peñas, and they'll run every day and every year, and they'll have their own jerseys and things like that. And then there's a number of folks, you know, predominantly Brits and Americans, who will tend to go over on a regular basis. And, yeah, you try to pick up things from them. But, I mean, the funny thing is I saw this year there was a guy from Chicago that's running it, wrote a book about it, and he got gored. And so, again, even if you know exactly what's going on, there's a huge element of randomness to it in terms of who's safe and who gets hit in this thing.
It occurs to me that this event could never take place in the United States, and not just because of animal rights activists putting a stop to it, but because lawyers would never let you do this without signing a 52-page liability waiver.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's another question I get a lot is, did you have to sign a waiver to do this? And this is not regulated, really. I mean, there is a set of rules and norms to how you do it.
Oh, really?
The fences go up at a certain time. You have to be in a certain area, otherwise you get kicked off. The police will go through, and if you look like you're drunk or you're too young or you're wearing, you know, protective clothing or something, you've got an iPhone or a camera, they'll police it in terms of the norms around. They don't want you to be a danger to other runners. But in terms of that, if you're over 18 or you look like you're over 18, you can actually stand up, you're not that drunk, and you roughly look like you know what you're doing, they will let you in there. And in fact, it's funny, when the bulls come and people try to get over the fences, you'll often see the police pushing people back onto the course. And it's a little bit of, you want to run with the bulls, you're going to run with the bulls. They do not actually let you crawl under or get over the fence unless there's a bull coming at you.
Wow. You know, that you have to be at least 18 and not too drunk is a similar rule for the frats at Mizzou.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of things that should apply to.
Did you have to run on the cobblestone part of the street? What's that like?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, I mean, you're running through side streets and cobblestones, and there's curbs and things like that. And so getting used to the terrain, and then if somebody falls down in front of you, you got to jump them. And so it's a challenge. You're trying to sprint through a side street with a bunch of animals in what's a 30-foot-wide corridor. It's pretty challenging, and you know, sometimes there's doorways you can duck into, sometimes there's not. Again, if the bull's coming at you, there's room in the fences for you to slip in between. But it's every man and woman for themselves when you're in there.
All right, last thing I want to ask you about, Liam, is the flug tug. That's a
Flugtag, yeah.
A Flugtag. Excuse, I didn't know the German pronunciation of this.
Yes.
It's a word I've never said before or even read before. I picked up your book. Tell my listeners what this is.
Yeah, so it's Red Bull sponsors an event they call the Flugtag, which is German for Flying Day. And what it is they get teams of amateur people who construct what they call human-powered flying machines. Basically, you're constructing a glider with some loose guidelines, and then they have a contest where they pick a body of water. In my case, in Chicago, it was out on Lake Michigan. They construct a roughly two-story high by 100-foot runway or platform, and the teams go up there and they push their craft off of the runway, and you try to see who can fall or glide the farthest. So they do this probably a half dozen times a year. There's usually three or so in the U.S. They had one in Pittsburgh a few weeks ago. There's one in Nashville in a couple weeks. And it's, you're trying to build amateur flying craft. It's kind of a cult event, but when we did it in Chicago, we went as the Flying Ditkas. You really can't go wrong in Chicago if you use Mike Ditka as your mascot. Got
right.
and your clarion call there. And so we went as the Flying Ditkas. It was a Saturday. 75,000 people turned out on North Beach here in Chicago to watch this event. And I often say, you know, 3 months later when Barack Obama was elected president, he had a rally in Grant Park, and 50,000 people showed up. So if you can figure out, you know, 25,000 more people showed up to watch a bunch of idiots live gliders off of a ramp and showed up to watch President Obama. But it's a great experience. My group, you know, we were a bunch of amateur engineers. One guy was in the military, so we actually put real thought into, we wanted to construct something that we thought might fly. And obviously nothing's really going to fly when it's created that way and you have to push it off something. So it's really a matter of how do you build the best crash lander you can. But it's a great experience. It's probably the closest I'll ever be to being a rock star. 75,000 people, you're on the Jumbotron. We were celebrities in Chicago for a month before and after that event.
It's a great story. Just one of those included in the book, The Best Year Ever. One guy, 1 year, 12 once-in-a-lifetime adventures. The man who lived those adventures and writes about it in this book is Liam Caffrey. Thanks so much for joining me here today, Liam.
Paul, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.
Meet me.
Time for another check on traffic with Frank Ladd.
Working with several incidents this afternoon, Dan. Got an overturned tractor trailer eastbound Highway 370 east of Missouri Bottom. So you slow approaching that in the eastbound direction from about 370. Westbound drivers are slowing down as well just to take a look. Northbound on Highway 270, a crash near Dorset. Then you're heavy again north of there up through Highway 70. You're heavy back towards Ladue, headed northbound. Southbound Highway 270, delays between Dorset and Doherty Ferry in pockets. Westbound 44, a little bit of volume west to 270. Southbound 170. Stop and go olive through 64. And we've got an incident on westbound Highway 70 near Goodfellow. You're backed up to West Florissant. Eastbound drivers, of course, slowing to take a look back towards 170. This update brought to you by Staples. Staples has low prices on everything your kids need to head back to school. And when your kids have what they need, they'll go back with confidence. Get everything they need for less at Staples. It's Pro Time. Frank Ladd in the KTRS Traffic Center.
American Eagle Credit Union's Visa Signature Credit Card is here. Imagine earning 1.5% cash back on every purchase. That's right, 1.5% cash back. No limit, no changing purchase categories, and no annual fee. Why choose a big bank card when you can get all of this and more from your neighbors at American Eagle Credit Union? American Eagle Credit Union has branches throughout the entire St. Louis metropolitan area, from Florissant to Arnold to O'Fallon to Shiloh, Illinois to O'Fallon, Missouri, and there and back. Stop by your local branch today and open up your account or apply for your new American Eagle Credit Union Signature Visa Card online at ameaglecu.org. 1.5% cash back, no limit, no annual fee. That's where I'm going. ameaglecu.org.
Membership eligibility required. All loans subject to approval. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, Mark Goldstein here for Edwards Carpet. It's time for our huge Labor Day sale, and we put together some incredible deals. We've got a 70-ounce faceweight carpet. In other words, a thick, top-of-the-line carpet that normally sells for $7.99 for only $4.79 a square foot. Solid and tonal plush carpets that go for $6.99 are now only $3.99 a square foot, and we have a nice entry-level carpet for only $2.89 a square foot. These all-inclusive prices include everything. Carpet, pad, installation, removal of your old carpet, and the moving of your furniture. Along with that, you'll get not 12, but 15 months interest-free financing, and to save you even more, you'll pay no tax. If you've even considered new flooring, this is the sale you don't want to miss. Look for our ad in the Post-Dispatch, visit us online at edwardscarpet.com, and hurry into any of our five showrooms. From now through Labor Day, we're donating $1 for every square yard of carpet we sell to Gateway to a Cure, benefiting the Michael J. Fox Foundation and St. Louis's Parkinson's Disease Association.
Come on down to Edwards Carpet Stores.
We know. Yes, we know you've been keeping a space available for that one app you've been waiting for. The one app that other apps have paved the way for. The one app that will make your day. What app is that? The KTRS app, of course. Just go to your app store, search KTRS, download the app, and listen to the Big 550 with crystal clarity wherever you go. And it's absolutely free. The KTRS phone app for your iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, and most Androids. Get it now and tap the app to get the Big 550, no matter where in the world you are. Live local talk. This is the Big 550 KTRS St. Louis, Ladue, Glen Carbon, University City, Edwardsville, Manchester, Wood River, Grafton, Collinsville, Pacific, and the world.
Streaming live at KTRS.com.